It's attitudes toward the truth. And we're going to be looking at John chapter 8, verse 32. What's my attitude towards the truth? Now, the text here is a very positive assertion from our Lord. And in this verse, he declares that there is truth. And truth is something that, no matter where it's at, it's pretty well definitive. And it exists as a viable commodity. Truth is something to be desired and something to be used. And of course, truth is always something of benefit. The truth, we are told, will make you free. And Jesus said that you can know the truth and it will make you free. Now, the truth is based on my word there in John chapter 8, verse 31 and 32. If you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So that's how it works. And on another occasion, when Jesus was praying for his disciples, he petitioned God to sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth, John chapter 17, verse 17. So there's no question. The Bible tells us that the word, the gospel, is truth. So by study and application of the word truth, then, we are made free. And we learn of the truth, and what we should do, we should seek to follow it. So that's how we know the truth. The American Heritage Dictionary renders attitude, though, as a state of mind or a feeling, a disposition. And it's true that everybody, is going to have some kind of attitude toward the truth. Good or bad, they'll have some kind of attitude toward the truth. And that attitude is going to be a great determining factor in what we then do. Yet, there's something that needs to be understood about an attitude. An attitude is not a substitute for the action itself. I'm sure we've all heard at times past that about an attitude of prayer, for example. An attitude of prayer would be a good thing. But an attitude of prayer is not prayer. It's not a substitute for prayer. And sometimes we'll talk about somebody who's learned the truth or is learning the truth, and they've got a good attitude towards obedience of the truth. And that's a good thing, too. But that's not a substitute for the actual obedience. An attitude leads us to actions, but not the action itself. And it goes on with other things like that. So I think that's an important distinction, and I think it's something that actually we probably should recognize more than what we do sometimes. Now what we're going to do, we're going to start off by looking at some improper attitudes, and then we'll look at some proper attitudes. As far as improper attitudes go, there's this idea of, I want the truth. That sounds good. But behind that is, I want the truth, and I want it what and how I want it. In other words, it's almost, it better be that way. Back when we lived in Indiana, there was a lady there, and this was the position she had. She always said, well, I want the truth. That's what, all the time, I want the truth, I want the truth. However, when there were passages that applied to others, you know, that's how she looked at it. But when it came to her family, and it was a large family, a great number of them were members of the church. When it came to her family, though, the passages that might apply to others didn't apply to the members of her family. So she wanted the truth. But she wanted it a certain way, she wanted a certain application of it, and in her mind, there were some people that were exempt from this. And I think you see that a lot in the church when it comes to, you know, family relations. Yeah, that's the truth, and that's what other people should do, but either not me or not someone else that I'm associated with or a family member. Somehow or another, they're supposed to get a pass, but it's the same truth for everyone. And one of the things, if you go to Matthew chapter 19, One of the things that you can look at here as an example is the rich young ruler. That's what we call him there in chapter 19 of Matthew. And you start about verse 16. Let me get that up there. Behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? I guess you could say by the question he had a good attitude, didn't he? And he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. And he saith unto him, Which? So Jesus said, Thou shalt do no murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, honor your father and your mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So the young man says, All these things I have kept from my youth up. What lack I yet? So Jesus says to him, If you'll be perfect, if you'll be complete, Go and sell what you have, give to the poor, you shall have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. Now the truth's got a little bit close here with him. And what happens is, the young man, the rich young man that had many possessions, when he heard that saying, he went away, for he had great possessions. It was going to cost him a lot. So you could say he starts off with a real good attitude, and yet now we're going to put that into practice, and well, not so fast there. So what we get from this is, when he asked these questions, he got an answer, and he got the truth of this. But it wasn't what he wanted to hear. I'm sure he wanted to hear something else beside that. And of course then, he goes away, unwilling to do what the Lord said needed to be done. Now, another improper attitude, and I think this happens a lot, that it's truth is flexible. You know, it's flexible. I remember a man was going about making a lot of disturbance. And he called the gospel, he said, as we enter the 21st century, we need the elastic gospel. In other words, it's going to be, stretched out and, expandable and flexible, that kind of idea of elasticity. But what does it mean by flexible? Well, first of all, it'd be flexible by individual. Now, we've all heard this thing. It means one thing to me and another thing to you. Now, we've heard that. Well, that's the same thing as when someone comes along and says, that's just your interpretation. You've heard that a lot, too. You've probably heard that a lot, too. There's no preacher down in Alabama back in the days when we're transitioning in the country, our transportation. And they still had carriages, horse-drawn carriages. I can't think. Anyway, you got the idea. And transitioning from that into automobiles and other things and so on. And he would travel in the early part of latter part of the 19th century. He would travel in these stagecoaches. There we go. That's the word. And he would travel those. A lot of them were owned by the mail companies. And he was on one time, and there were some other people on there, and you've got the idea, you're in close proximity to each other. And conversations came up, and a lady there asked him where he was headed, and he told her. And, really? And why are you going over there? So Brother Lewis said, well, I'm a preacher. I'm going over there to preach. And she said, oh, really? She said, what do you preach? Well, he had a little coat pocket New Testament, and he pulled that out and opened it up, read Mark 16:16. He that believes and is baptized, he that does not believe will be condemned. And she said, that's just your interpretation. All he did was read it, And that's what he told her. All I did was read it. I didn't even tell you if I believed it or not.
But that's how people are. It's just your interpretation. Look at what it says. And somehow or another, you know, that you can do this kind of thing. And so, if this is true, then it would vary from individual to individual. And some are convinced, you know, that the gospel's flexible that way. Now, another way is that the gospel is flexible by time. Some think that a first century message cannot possibly fit a 21st century culture. Now, you know what's coming. So then there develops the attitude that the gospel is out of touch, out of step, and it needs to change with the times and get with it. And a lot of this comes along with, social sins, call them that, any number of them. And, yes, that used to be a sin, but, you know, it's not much anymore. Culture changes and they think that the gospel should change as well. Where does that come from? Well, that comes from an idea that people have and they think that the gospel ought to be that way and flexible in that regard. Now, if you turn to Acts chapter 15, in the first century, there were those that were of the opinion that the gospel was flexible and ought to be adapted, changed, whatever you want to say. But in chapter 15 of Acts, and verses 1 and 2, now this is in regard to the Gentiles. The gospel had originally gone to those that were Jews, and then it spread to those who were Gentiles, and things were the same for one for the other, but people got the idea, well, wait a minute now, you know, we were Jews first and then Gentiles, and so they wanted to factor that in some way. Now, I think what you got, you know, the gospel goes to the Jew first and also to the Greek, we're told, and the power of God and the salvation and all that. But that's just how the gospel went to different people. It doesn't really signify that there's something special about the one over the other. One's first and the others follow after that. That's about all you can make of it. But these individuals thought that there was. They thought that the Gentiles ought to first become Jews, or at least Jewish proselytes, before they could obey the gospel. And this was the big issue of the first century. It's meaningless to us today. I've never run into anybody who thought that today. But in those days, it was such a big problem that they met in Judea to discuss this. Look at verse 1. Certain men which came down from Judea taught the brethren, saying, except you be circumcised after the manner of Moses, you cannot be saved. So now this is what was going on. And you follow along in the reading that there's dispute over this. And they really got to get to the bottom of it and settle this matter. Because it would be unsettling for the church. And would greatly disrupt the unity of the church and the work that was going on. And you go over to verse 24. And you find, therefore, as much as we have heard, that certain went out from among us, have troubled you with words, subverting your souls, saying, you must be circumcised and keep the law, to whom we gave no such commandment. Now that's where it comes out. There's no basis for this. But somebody thinks that it should be that way, and they think that the gospel ought to be flexible. That it ought to allow this kind of a thing. And all you really needed to do was come up with some authority for it. Now, they tried this, and the answers that were given as they're discussing this between verse 1 and between verse 24, they look at an example, they look at a necessary inference, they look at the command. There's no authority for it. And what do they say then in verse 24? We gave no such commandment. The people that come up with this, they're kind of operating on their own. And so that would probably stop a lot of things. I don't think it ever stopped everything completely, but it would stop a lot of things. But again, it's an improper attitude to decide to add something for certain circumstances to the gospel. Now, proper attitudes. Let's look at those for just a moment here. Proper attitudes. Now, the very first one should be seeking the truth. There are a lot of passages that tell us about seeking things and other things like that. One of the things I like is what's said, and we really sometimes we don't get the full impact of it in some translations. It's Acts chapter 17 and verse 11. Well-known passage. Turn over there and look at it. The King James has, "These were more noble than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily, whether those things were so." Now there's a change in newer translations, and I think it's a good change, and I think it really changes or maybe emphasizes more about these folks and about their attitude. Newer translations have that they received the word with all eagerness of mind. Now, no matter how you look at this, if there are people that are seeking the truth and they're doing this with eagerness of mind, you know that they've got a burning desire to know the truth. You know that from the wording that's used here. And that's exactly how it should be. We should have this burning desire, have this eagerness to learn the truth. I think it, you know, how many times have you heard a lesson on something like, I don't know, the worship of the church? Heard lots of them. I don't know how many I've heard. And how about, how many times have you heard it explained, whether briefly or in depth, about the steps of salvation? I'm sure many times. There's probably lots of times we've heard lessons on a subject over and over, over again. Those things were not harmful for us. You know, there's the old thing about when you repeat something that everybody knows, and a colloquial expression is, well, you're preaching to the choir. Have you heard that? Why are you preaching to the choir? To get them to sing. So we go over these things, you see, so it becomes common knowledge to us. And we don't have to spend a whole lot of time thinking this. We've heard it enough that it can just roll right out, and we can deliver it. I tell you what, that's how you learned to spell words when you were younger. The multiplication tables. All those things are all done through repetition. And it doesn't hurt anybody anything. And you will retain things. And so you get the choir to sing. I think we can find out the value of this when we consider a passage, again, one that we know. It's Proverbs chapter 23, verse 23. Buy the truth and sell it not. How valuable is it? And so, it shouldn't be, well, I've heard a lesson on this once before. It shouldn't be that. It's always been, I've always thought that if it's the truth, and it's being preached, or taught in a class, or whatever it is, if it's coming from the Bible, it's what I need to hear. And it doesn't matter how many times I would need to hear it, because it will be good for me. It will be profitable for me. And I will understand the value of it. Buy the truth, sell it not. Also, we would overcome various obstacles in seeking after the truth. We looked at these passages this morning in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We'll just go over them just briefly here. But there were problems among the Jews and the Gentiles. There's no question about that, or the Greeks as they're called in some translations. And they're explained for us in verses 22 and 23. The Jews require a sign and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But what do? Well, we preach Christ crucified. It's not flexible. It can't be changed. We're going to preach Christ crucified. And unto the Jews, that might be a stumbling block, but that's all we've got. And under the Greeks, it might be foolishness, but again, that's all we've got. But now, if you see what happens here, these stumbling blocks, this foolishness, as it's viewed, can be overcome in verse 24, unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks. Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. And so it would be overcome because, well, that's what we need. And that's all that we need. And we don't need any other changes. It's not according to individual or time or anything like that. It's not flexible in that way. And so to appreciate these things and to realize what value it can be for us in overcoming obstacles like this, I think a lot of obstacles in life, it'll help us to overcome a great number of things. Can you think of a time from that time of the first century to this when there's been more trouble delivered towards the church than that time? Starting out, what you read about in the New Testament. You know, they were opposed at the first. They were opposed by the Jews. That's where the persecution came from. Then they were opposed by some of the Gentiles, some of the pagans. You read about Ephesus there. Those were not the Jews that were opposing them. Those were the people who worshipped Diana that raised this uproar. And a number of other things. Look at all of the trouble that they encountered. What'd they change? What did they change? They didn't change anything about what they were doing or what they taught or what they stood for. You know, John and Peter were arrested. And what did they say? We can't help but speak the things that we have heard and seen. That's all we can do. And what did that change? No, it didn't change. And so it hasn't changed from that time to this. And things aren't as bad now as they were then. So obstacles can be overcome. But the truth has to remain the truth. The clear, present, unvarnished truth. And then it ought to be that I will obey the truth no matter what the cost may be. In Matthew chapter 16, we find Jesus here mentioning something about there being a cost to it. You know, there's a cost to everything. I remember whenever I was in college, I don't know why. Anyway, I was in college and you had to take these electives. My major was biology, but you got to take electives. Now, electives are not in your field. They say that's to give you a more rounded education. I don't know. Anyway, that's what they say. I always thought that electives were given so they could keep you in college longer and make more money off of you. But then I'm cynical, I guess. So I was told I had to take a couple of electives, because I'd taken everything I possibly could for my major that was available. One of the electives I chose was a class in economics. I do not know why I did that. I spent many a day in that class thinking about gnawing off a toe or something. I tell you. But every day the teacher would come in and go over. He had an overhead projector. And he would write out there the letters. All these letters looked like it made a word, but each letter stood for a word, and he started off every day explaining this. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. Bad grammar, but that's what it meant. And you know, he did that every day and explained it, and that's the only thing I remember from that class. That's that repetition again, you know. But you know, he's right about that, and that's not just in economics, is it? No, it's not economics. It's in a whole number of things. There's no such thing as a free lunch. No, there sure isn't. What about when it comes to things of a religious nature? Is there such a thing as a free lunch? Oh, there's people that think they are. There is. There's people that think, oh, salvation is there and doesn't cost you anything. Well, that's just as bogus as you can get. Because there's a cost to salvation. Think of the cost that Jesus paid. There's something expected of us, too. There's a cost to us to be Christians. There's no such thing as a free lunch. But then there's the other side of the coin. There's a cost. I got a sermon from years gone by. Talk about the cost of being a sinner. There's a cost to being a sinner. And I'll tell you what, the cost is too high. It's too high. Because in the end, after all of the misery and suffering it can cause in this life, sin takes your soul. Too high a cost. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And Jesus was pointing out, I think, that principle long before that college professor or I ever drew a breath. But Matthew chapter 16, starting at verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. There's a cost here. Now, not deny yourself certain things. Deny yourself. Get a hold of yourself. Recognize what this is all about and what it's worth and what it will do. And deny yourself. There's the biggest obstacle we're ever going to have, is ourself. That's what gets in the way all the time. We can say this or that or the other and point at this person or that person and so on. Someone calls me up and tells me, well, I'm having trouble with my son. Oh, what's wrong with you? Well, he wants to go to these dances. Now, these were things, I don't know if they do them anymore in high school or not, but they did them back where we're from. They go into the gym, turn the lights down, they got music, and the kids all dance and everything. Oh, he wants to go to those things. I just didn't think that was a very good thing for young people to do. And we never let our kids go to those kinds of things, but his son was wanting to go. And so we talked about it for a little bit, and he said he's wanting to go because these other members here, they let their kids go. So what's he doing? Well, he's laying it on the other people and their kids and so on like that. And I finally told him, I said, I don't think that's the problem. The problem's not the other people. They're contributing to the problem, sure. But I said, you know what the real problem is? He said, what? He wants to go. That's the real problem right there. All other things will contribute to that, but he wants to go. And he spent the rest of the phone conversation denying that his son wanted to go. I thought, that's what you called up about. But there's what the problem is. That's what the problem is with me. That's what the problem is with you. Temptation. Whatever your temptation is, saunters along your way. And it gets out there, you know, and it gets on your radar, right? And then what's the problem? Oh, it's the temptation. Well, yeah, you know, we ought to get away from it. But then sometimes we don't. Whose problem is that? What's happened here? It's me. I see it. It attracts me. And I head for it. It's me. Deny yourself. It is so hard to do, isn't it? Deny yourself. But that's what he says that's necessary here. First thing. Before anything else. You got to do that. You can't do that. Taking up the cross, following me. It's not going to happen. Whosoever will save his life shall lose it. Whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. Boy, that's backwards, isn't it? From what the world thinks. And what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world? Well, then, he's got it made. That's it right there. That's the main thing in life. And lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? The most valuable thing he got. What do you give in exchange for it? What would you take and trade for it? The cost is too high. Too bad some people do. And for what? Do you remember the sin of Achan? And the far-reaching consequences of that act? He took some things and they had a certain intrinsic value to them, and he saw them. And he wanted them. And he took them. And he hid them. And he's found out. Well, he paid the consequences. And all of his family and his relatives. Cost is too high, you see. And what started it all? He just couldn't deny himself. What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his angels. And what does it say? He shall reward every man according to his works. Now, knowing that, I realize that anything worthwhile requires some dedication, no matter what it is. And I think that's especially true in religious matters. And a value of something is not determined by the price tag that some might put on it. The value of something is determined by the price of sacrifice. Salvation has become possible by the price of sacrifice. That's with Jesus Christ. The proper attitude then would be, I want to hear His gospel. I've got an eagerness for it. And it will help me to overcome all obstacles. It'll tell me what sin is. It tells me what to do. It tells me that should I fall into sin, I don't just wallow in pity and misery, but I turn myself around and I repent and seek God's mercy and grace. So much we can learn. So much we can do. So much we can accomplish if we have a proper attitude. Take your song books, turn to the Songs of Men's Selection. The Word of God is unchangeable. Regardless of everything we've looked at, what people might think about it being flexible and all that other, it's unchangeable. But here's the thing. It may not be what some want to hear. But it is all that any of us will hear. And so man conforms to the gospel, not the gospel conforming to man. We must cultivate the proper attitude for obedience to take place and for salvation to become a reality. What's your attitude toward the truth? Is it as it should be? Do you need to obey the truth tonight? Perhaps do you need to make correction? We'd be happy to assist anyone. That's a need in either one of those areas. But now's the time for you to decide. This is the right place. This is the right time to seek the truth, the whole truth, for your whole life. Nothing could be greater than that. If you're subject, why don't you come all together, we stand and sing.